I could give you a million reasons why real estate is a horrible thing to do, but I can also give you a million reasons why it's great. Now, learning property was huge because it was like, we did one, we'll do another one. It wasn't that bad. And so we just continue to take those incremental steps.
Do you love your job, but want other investment options than your company's 401k and trying to pick stocks? If so, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, you will get actionable information for your passive real estate investment journey. Welcome back to another episode of Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. Here's your host, Justin Dixon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. I'm your host, Justin Dixon. And today we've got Brian Escudero on the podcast. Super interesting conversation, especially if you're interested in kind of starting your journey as an active real estate investor. He got into real estate just last year in 2022. And has grown up to and has multiple duplexes and quadplexes across Tennessee, Ohio, and they just closed on 123 unit out in Fort Worth, Texas. So really interesting conversation. He talks about systems and processes to get started and to make yourself feel as confident as possible as you start your investing journey, writing a business plan, analyzing markets. So we kind of get really into a lot of kind of entry level, but also diving in deep into some of these concepts. So let's get Brian on the pod. Brian, man, hey, welcome to the podcast. Happy to have you on.
Thanks for having me on, Justin. Glad to be here.
Awesome. Well, let's get started. Jump right in. Tell me a little bit about yourself and First Gen Foundations. And yeah, we'll go from there.
So First Gen Foundations, we started probably at the beginning of 2022. So we're about a year and a half old. We started with a duplex and the goal was one more by the end of the year, but we're 181 units in.
Got it.
$1 million assets under management. And the goal there, that only represents the amount of people that we've been able to help. Our goal is to help educate, grow, and give the education for the first gen investor to grow their capital, to give to the people and the causes that are important to them. And so that's our focus. That's our drive. That's our why.
Got it. So tell me about kind of your journey, I guess, if you started your investing journey in 2022, what have you been doing up until that point? And are you currently doing W-2 work? Like, do you have a full-time job or tell me kind of how that all works?
Yeah, so I've been in media for about 25 years. I still work my W-2. I'm an executive in one of the top five media companies in the country. We're the largest in the world, Spanish speaking. And so I do manage large teams. My focus is strategic management, organizational management, and technical operations. And so what that helped me transition from that W-2 space into real estate was systems, right? Systems, yeah. Process. And having that ability allows me to continue to do both. As we scale up First Gen Foundations, I can't let go of the W-2. I still enjoy my job. Like, I'm not one of these guys that wants to leave. I enjoy it. I work with amazing people. I get some really cool projects, work with famous people, part of important events. And so my drive is not that. It's not to leave the W-2. It's just as I started learning about real estate, the drive was, man, this is a real thing. This is a real vehicle that can help create wealth for people. Let's help people understand it. And so we meet with people and it's been a good story to tell so far.
So I'm curious. So I always like to learn people's kind of journey to real estate, right? Because unless you were born in a family that was entrepreneurial or already invested in real estate, you've got to find it somehow, right? And sometimes it's a book, sometimes you just stumble upon a podcast or something. So how did you, working in the W-2, which you're still in, how did you learn about real estate and what kind of got you started?
So I grew up in a working class family. You know, I'm one of five kids. My parents immigrated from Colombia 50 some odd years ago. Finished high school, couldn't go to college, right? Started, but had to stop to work. And then through a series of events, right? My wife's health and just things, I ended up graduating college pretty late. I finally graduated. I was 41, I think, 41, 42. And so at that point, we went to the graduation, got back, hit COVID. I got COVID. And then at the end of that, it was like, all right, Lord, what's next? Is it real estate or my master's degree? And so I was able to work from home a little bit during the pandemic. I really didn't spend too much time, but I went on a bike ride and I listened to a podcast, right? And so this podcast was talking about the boring way of growing in real estate. And I believe in boring growth, right? I don't like the flash in the pan stuff. And so there was a story on there where a guy says, oh, my first action in real estate was washing my truck. And that was an interesting take. And the guy says, I was a teacher. I had a little bit of debt. I didn't have a lot of money, but I had this brand new F-150 that I had. He's like, I needed some money to put a down payment on a house. I didn't know the first thing about buying a house. looking for a property or anything like that, but I knew I needed some money. So I was going to sell my truck, and I don't know how to sell my truck, but I know if I was going to sell my truck, it needed to be clean. So I washed my truck. And so for me, that was buying a book. I live in Miami. And so in Miami, real estate is really just out of bounds here. It's really hard to cash flow anything. There's great appreciation, but just cash flowing is really tough. So I bought the book, Long Distance Real Estate Investing by David Green.
Yep.
Read that book. And then that just opened the floodgates. Since then, that was maybe about a year and a half ago, I probably read about 30, close to 40 books. I'm an education junkie. And so that helped me go to Tennessee, right? Take a trip to Tennessee, start gathering that team, right? The real estate agent, the property manager, the lender, all that stuff. And then we pulled the trigger on our first property out in Tennessee. Then the second one in a month, then a 6-unit, a single family. Then we went into the syndication space. So we got a 40-unit and then 123 units that we closed on in July.
So that's an awesome story. And our journeys kind of started in a similar fashion. I started with the duplex before kind of dipping my toe into and focusing more on the syndication world just from a scale perspective. So I have a lot of people on the pod, and typically people start in single family, right? They buy what they know. They typically have a house and then they kind of just buy another one. How did you jump from just not knowing about real estate, listening to a podcast, reading a book, and then jumping into a duplex as opposed to a single family house? Why a duplex to start?
So just understanding risk, right? Up until that point, I had my 401k, you know, through work, had an IRA, dabbled very, very shortly in crypto. I took a knock on the head and I was done. But I understood that a single family has one source of income. When that person leaves, that's gone.
Yep.
A duplex has two. If one guy leaves, I still have the other guy. Understanding economies of scale, right? The roof on two is cheaper per unit than the roof on one. Mm-hmm. And then just scaling that out, right? The roof on 40 is cheaper per unit than the roof on one. So one of the things that I've been congratulated on was writing a business plan before I bought my first duplex. Right. So I took the time to do that and just to start really understanding what this company could be and what this journey could be by understanding what I wanted to be and what I didn't want to be. And so I'm never going to be the person that as a jet setter. I don't want that life. I don't need that life. I just wanted slow, steady growth. And that's it. So a duplex was a good place to start. The idea of a starter home where you can make mistakes, that was always very impressive to me. I'm like, who the hell buys a house to learn something? Like, you're spending $100,000. Like, that's an expensive lesson. But then understanding, no, you don't spend $100,000. You spend the down payment, you fix it up, and you kind of manage it. And we brought in an investor. That's a whole different story of the birth of trying to help people and helping that investor shake off some fear and get into something. But the idea was understanding risk, understanding process, and knowing that people that are not smarter than me do well in this, right? I'm not smarter than them. They're certainly not smarter than me. Right. I can understand this. It moves at a speed that I can understand. Just all those little things, right? And we talk a lot about incremental growth, right? It's not the home run, right? We're just base hits, right?
Yeah.
We can get 1,000 base hits, we'll get into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no, that's super interesting. And I want to dig into more of the business plan because I think some people jump in or they fall into real estate investing kind of accidentally. So I want to learn a little bit more about your business plan. But before we do that, let's take a quick sponsor break and we'll be right back.
Whether you're in a job you love or hate, building a financial foundation is important. This foundation can support you by providing passive income, stability in an uncertain economy, or the launching pad for you to start your own business. Great Venture Capital helps busy professionals invest in commercial real estate to build passive income streams, grow wealth, and take advantage of tax benefits. If you'd like to learn more, check us out at greatventurecapital.com or send an email to justin@greatventurecapital.com.
All right, we are back on the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. So Brian, before the break, we kind of learned about your initial journey kind of working as a W-2 employee for a big media company and then starting this business back in 2022. So you're talking about a business plan that you wrote before you even bought your first duplex. So I'm kind of curious, if I think about my journey, I definitely had a plan, but I definitely didn't formulate it into a formal business plan. So I'm curious kind of, what did that look like? You hadn't bought anything yet and you're probably just absorbing a ton of content from podcasts and books. And so what did that business plan look like? And how far in the future did you project out kind of what you wanted it to be?
So I have a business background. I've been on the executive side for a little while now. And so I knew what I knew, which was I needed to plan out. And one of the things that is important, people think they might not know how to get into real estate, but there are skills that you're acquiring through life.
Yeah.
Whether you're a construction worker or a cab driver, whatever, there are skills, right? And so that's one of the skills I had. And so that business plan looked like I did a SWOT analysis, like what are my strengths, my weaknesses, what are the opportunities in real estate, and what are the threats, right? Just mapping that out. Then through books and podcasts, really important for me to understand what a successful deal looked like and what a not successful deal looked like. Is $100 on a single family home a good deal? Cash flowing at the end of everything. Yes, no. Is it $500? Is it $50? Is it breaking even? Is that okay? Because I have my thoughts, right? And again, the idea of getting into real estate was to provide something for my loved ones and leaving them passive income if something were to happen to me. But understanding that if I took a look at it, right? And the thought was a master's degree is going to be about $50,000 in 3 years. Real estate, about $50,000. And in 6 months, I know if I'm good at it or not.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's something that I can do. So I did a SWOT analysis. I looked at what the success parameters were. I looked at markets, like what type of market. And I didn't know all the markets, but I knew that I didn't want to be in a class A. Why? Because I needed some headroom, right? I needed to be able to do some value add stuff. And then for us, the crux was that we were going to be a company that helps people, right? Where we wanted to be in a place of authority to help others. And we have like this thing is like we help tenants, we help the property managers, we help the investors, and they'll take care of us. And in that order. And so I've always lived in a house as a child, right? I lived in an apartment for a little bit as an adult, but we always had a safe place to stay, right? And so we want to give that to other people. And you hear the story of the slumlords, and that's not what we want to be. And so we come in, we take over this unit, we fix it up. And so we're able to help. And the Saturday where I was going to make the final offer on the first property, I was in a good mood. I was like, yeah. My wife stopped me cold. She's like, who are we helping? Then we're helping us. And she says, you said, and this is very important. She says, you said that with every property we purchase, we're going to help somebody.
Yep.
Who are we helping? Turned into a 3-hour conversation about what the company was going to be, right? Mm-hmm. And so that really just set the level of what this was going to be. And so, again, we opened it up to an investor who was taking that first step.
Got it.
It continues to be a safe investment. Like, it's not gangbusters. It's just steady Eddie, right? And so that business plan drove that. The idea of throwing money at a wall, some people can do that and they have enough to do that. And we have some money to do that. But we understand, right? Coming from a place where we didn't grow up with money, we're less likely to do that. And so the business plan helped frame what that first year was going to look like. I was looking at over it a few weeks ago. We had mapped it out to 5 years, and our goal was by 5 years to have 8 units. Again, we fully accelerated that when I learned about the syndication model. I teamed up with my business partner. And so I bring that skill set of strategic management from my W-2, where it's long-term planning, it's organizational structures. And so if we spread this out this way, we could scale faster. And that's what has driven the growth, right? It's the idea of we're taking just incremental steps. I don't think these are huge steps. It's just us not being scared of taking that next step. And that is the ability. And that one of the strengths that I have in that business plan is the ability to make decisions with imperfect information. Mm-hmm. And so some people just get stuck in making a decision when the reality is it's not right or wrong. It's just somebody's got to pull the trigger on it. And so
you're stuck in the analysis paralysis sometimes. And with real estate, you're never going to have 100% clarity on every single variable, right? You do enough diligence and talking to people and look at the data out there as much as you possibly can, but nobody has a crystal ball. Nobody knows what's going to happen. Nobody knew in 2021 that interest rates were going to go from 2 to 7 in 6-8 months. So it is a skill, because I grew up in a working class family, didn't have a lot. I was very much a budgeted person. And so the thought of investing $50,000 our first deal was a daunting check to write, right? So totally can appreciate kind of that scarcity mindset, that you're doing something that's not normal, because not as many people in comparison to people that just work W-2s and were taking definitely an alternate path. So I think that business plan idea and actually writing it out and doing the analysis and all that stuff, while it took a lot of time, it definitely probably has helped you scale faster, right? Because you kind of already mapped out what good looks like, what great looks like, and all of that. I'm curious about Tennessee. I actually just got back from Tennessee. I was at a conference out there a few weeks ago. My first time in Tennessee, other than driving through it one time. But how did you pick Tennessee? What part of Tennessee did you look at?
So I picked Tennessee because, again, it was in Miami, right? And strategically, I didn't want it to be somewhere close enough for me to drive a lot, right?
Okay.
But there's stuff on the East Coast a couple of hours away. And I know that if it was a couple of hours away, I'm going to go there every other week, right? Which starts eating into my costs because of gas and mileage and time and all that stuff. So I have a very good friend of mine that is a real estate agent in Tullahoma, which is the south central part of Tennessee.
Okay.
He's a good, strong real estate agent. So I flew out there just to see him, and he drove me around a little bit. And I wanted to see what him and his partner were doing. They do fix and flips, because I still didn't know what I wanted to do. I just knew I wanted to do. So I came back. I was hoping to not come back discouraged. Like, the goal was, go see what it is, and hopefully you don't come back discouraged. And I came back super encouraged, right? It was like, wow, there's options out there. This particular individual was raised poor, like trailer park, holes in the floor. And he's like, I would have killed for a little crappy duplex to live in. I'm able to provide, not a crappy duplex, but a good duplex to live in. He's like, I'm able to provide that for others. And just to see him grow, it was very encouraging for me. And so I worked with him, and we ended up buying the first two properties. They're about 15 minutes away in a small town called Jackson, Tennessee. This is about 2 hours away from Nashville, southwest of Nashville. Again, boring little properties. They cash flow well. The appreciation will get there because Ford is opening a factory. We did a little bit of market analysis, but I got the first one for $112,000. The second one was $103,000. And so we kind of treat them as sisters, right?
Yeah.
They're close to each other. But yeah, and they're doing what they're supposed to do. And so doing that just helped us flex that muscle a little bit. Then the next one was a 6-unit in Columbus, Ohio, which is where we like to continue to purchase there. And then we have 1, 2, 3, 4. We have 4 separate properties there. They're smaller units. And then we have one of our syndications is an apartment complex in Tampa, Florida. And the other one is in Fort Worth, Texas.
Got it. And so you've read the book, Long Distance Real Estate Investing, which I don't know if I've read it or I've definitely listened to it, because that was always what I learned in the beginning was invest in your backyard so you can go see it, right? You can manage it yourself. And then the idea of doing that, one, I didn't want to be a landlord, right? I didn't want to be managing tenants and toilets and trash and what everybody talks about when they don't want to get into real estate. And so our first duplex was in Pittsburgh. We lived in Philly, not out of state, but other side of the state. So very similar. How have you set up systems and processes to manage those out-of-state assets? Because when I talk to people and people listening to this, maybe like, well, I'd love to invest in Tennessee, or I'd love to invest in maybe a lower cost area. Maybe they live in Texas where I live in Austin or Miami. And obviously, like you said, you can't really cash flow. It's more of an appreciation play. But how did you set that up? So help educate some people that are listening to feel comfortable and confident that they can build a team to manage these assets out of state when they're not 100 some units, because that's when you have on-site management and you can afford it and all that fun stuff. A duplex, you're paying a lot of money in asset management fees or property management fees and everything.
Yeah. So what we ended up doing was, again, literally writing the process down, right? So it's find a market, yep. Right? You study a market, right? What's the job growth, the population growth? What industries are there? How's the crime? All this stuff. You have to analyze a market. Because first, you're going to look at the vehicle, which is real estate. It's a solid vehicle. Then you're going to look at the market. And so this is the market that I want to. And you start drilling down. What I did was I went on Bigger Pockets. I had a pro membership. It was like $400 for the year, consuming a lot of that content on the forums. And so I started just looking at what are the teams that you need. Again, you need a real estate agent. So you're going to interview real estate agents. And what you want to do is you want to have a list of questions for those real estate agents. You want to have a real estate agent that is also an investor, because they understand where you're coming from, that you're out of state. So you can find a lot of those people in Bigger Pockets, but you should have a list of questions because you're going to interview 4, 5, or 6 real estate agents. You can Google them. You can go on Bigger Pockets and say, hey, I like Nashville. Does anybody have any real estate agents in Nashville? And you'll get a bunch of people that'll give you information, right? So then you're going to interview those real estate agents. Boom. You're going to interview brokers. You're going to interview property managers. And it takes some work, right? It's not all fun and games. One thing that I've realized is keeping those records of these 20 questions I asked. I do the interviews, and then I went over and read over them, and I had my notes on each of them, and we picked one. And so on the Tennessee side, it was much more difficult because it was a small city, small town, to find a good property manager, someone that understood what we were trying to do, someone that was going to be helpful and responsive, someone that wasn't too big. This loser with 2 duplexes, we're never going to return his call, or too small that says, oh my God, I don't have the bandwidth to handle these 2 duplexes. And so it's understanding that mix. And then not being scared to pull the trigger, right? Like we talked about it, the paralysis analysis, like you could just sit there and I could give you a million reasons why real estate is a horrible thing to do, but I can also give you a million reasons why it's great. And until you do one, right? That learning property was huge because it was like, we did one, we'll do another one. It wasn't that bad. And so we just continue to take those incremental steps. So yeah, lists, process, draw it out. Like step one, real estate is my vehicle. Okay, I'm going to learn about real estate. Step two is understand what market I want to get into. What asset class I want to get into, what real estate agents I want to talk to, what property managers I want to talk to, what insurance agents I want to talk to. And those books, there's a million of them, they literally write out the steps. I'm not smarter than anyone. I can just follow a list, right?
Yeah.
That has been, again, the ability to just do the thing that I'm being told to do. That's it. That's all I have.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of walking in other people's footsteps. They've blazed the trail. And luckily now there's a ton of content that you can digest. Sometimes I think it's too much because literally when we first got started, it was, well, if you listen to Bigger Pockets podcast, every episode was somebody successful in some asset class, right? Fix and flip, single family, multifamily, BRRRR, like all that stuff. And so you can chase a shiny object. And so I think to your point, doing that analysis, giving yourself the freedom to look at all these different options and finding the one that resonates the most with you, and then going deep in that one asset class is important. Another thing that's important is, especially if you're doing small multis or even single family as an investor, finding a real estate agent that is an investor and works with out-of-state investors is super important, because that's one thing that I learned very quickly was if you talk to a more kind of consumer residential real estate agent that is helping people with single family houses for their primary residence, is a different conversation and their level of involvement is different than if I'm an investor out of state, right? I'm going to expect them to be a little bit more knowledgeable and helping me make a decision on a property versus if it's my primary, I'm going to be driving that boat as far as that goes. So I think that's super important. And then the property manager thing, like you said, is you have to find that sweet spot, especially if you're a small fish in a pond, right? You got to make sure that property manager can support what you have and they're not too big or not too small. What are some of the questions? You don't need to give me the list of 20, but when you think about talking to real estate agents that are investors, how do you suss out that a real estate agent, you know, they're looking for business, right? Because they work on commission. So they may say things that they're like, yeah, I'll help you. Happy to help. Especially now, maybe when the market is softer than it was 2 years ago. What are some of the things that you think people should ask when they're looking for an agent out of their market?
Yeah. So there's obviously going to be some overlap, right? Because a lot of these people will sell residential and also.
Yeah, 100%.
So, but I want to make sure that they're knowledgeable of the market and the pockets of the market. And I'll say, hey, I'm an investor. I don't live there. I don't want to live there, right? I think it's a great market, but my family's here. What are the pockets that work well for my business plan? My business plan is value add. My specific range is from 150 to 250. I don't want to be in this range. I want to be in duplexes. I'm willing to go up to 4 units, right? Whatever your plan is. But you want to have that plan before, because the more specific you can get to that real estate agent, the better they're going to be able to answer the question. So you want to have that sussed out. But like you mentioned, you niche down, right? So for us, our first commercial property was a 6 unit. And so that was through the conversation with this real estate agent. He was like, oh, are you scared of moving into commercial? I said, no, I'm not. I've been studying it. It's fine. Okay, fine. So as I discussed that with him, I start now asking him, where do you invest? Oh, I like to invest in something as specific as he starts giving me zip codes. I invest this zip code. I like this part of town. Because if they're just giving me cities, that's too general. They're telling me, if you're going to invest here, go north of this street, go east or west of this street. I have a property here, a property there. It becomes more of an organic conversation. And there has to be more than one. Because the first one is you're interviewing that person, right? And if you just get the good general vibe, I ask them about communication, like how often they communicate, how quickly I'm going to have access to them, right? And you test it out, right? So they tell me, oh, I'm super responsive, all this stuff. They're going to tell you that on that first interview. But by the second call, not that you're a pain in the butt, right? Because nobody wants that. But hey, I saw this house in this neighborhood. What do you think? And when they tell me, it depends, I like that.
Yeah.
Because they're going to say, well, what are you looking for? You're looking to cash flow more? You're looking for appreciation more? And if they start asking you questions on what's the hold that you want? What kind of interest rate are you going to get? Are you working with floating rate debt? Are you going to get fixed rate debt? If they start asking me the questions, these buzzwords that I know as an investor, then I know they're an investor. And then I start asking them about their successes. Like, hey, how many properties have you invested? And they don't need to give me their whole life story, but you can tell pretty quickly if someone's just kind of blowing smoke.
Yep.
And so it's got to be that relationship. Why? The person, the guy in Columbus, that he's our real estate agent, within 4 months between my partner and myself, we gave him well over $1 million of business. And so he knew, taking us seriously, understanding what the plan was, this and that, he was able to quickly get 4 properties in, I don't know, a 4 month span or whatever.
Yeah.
You know? And again, he's busy doing other stuff, but that was like, it was a good run for him with us. And we continued to do business with him.
Yeah. I think one thing you mentioned that's super interesting, and one thing that I did not do when I started in the syndication world, is being specific on what you are looking for. And because brokers, especially in commercial real estate, won't take you seriously if you start saying, well, I'm open to A, B, C, or D class assets. I'm open to anything from 75 to 400 units. I'm open to any part of town. Like, if you're just saying, give me what you got, they're going to send you all the crap that they have in their inbox that has already been looked at by serious investors. Even though it feels like you're limiting your options, you're actually building better relationships by saying, I only want to see things in, to your point, 2 to 4 units in these zip codes, in this price range that have a value add play, et cetera, right? But good brokers or good agents are going to kind of push your boundaries a little bit, right? They're going to say, well, I know you're only looking for 4 units, but here's an 8 unit in that same zip code that has been on the market for X amount of days. I think we can lower the price and I think we can go for that one, right? So you're going to get that stuff and you have the ability to obviously to say, sure, let me take a look, or no, I need to stay in my buy box. But yeah, having a very good, solid, niched kind of approach is super powerful. And I went the opposite direction and I paid a price for it. I spent a lot of time spinning my wheels. So
yeah, but that's going to happen, right? I remember my first deal fell through because I wanted to make a good deal a great deal. Mm. As the obvious thing is this, I'm like, I want to pay this much.
Undercut, right? Too much.
Undercut. And it was a good deal. It was a good, solid deal. And I was like, nope, I'm sticking it because I know more than this guy, right? This guy doesn't know what I'm talking about. And when it went away, I was like, oh, that sucks. That would have been a good deal. But again, you just do it. Like, find properties. It's okay to make bad offers. There's always another deal. You mentioned the syndication. Well, one thing I've learned in talking with investors is most people don't want to be real estate investors. Mm-hmm. They want to invest in real estate.
Yeah.
Right? They don't want to do what you and I do as syndicators. Look, man, I enjoy it. It's fun for me getting properties online. You know, we got into a syndication where there were overruns and it did take too long and you tighten up the process and you're doing well for the investors and that's great. But the reality is there's a lot of people that don't want to do that. And that's cool. And that's where the syndication or the passive investments come into play. And that's also something that people need to look at. Like, hey, it's okay to not want to be the one that's analyzing stuff. I mean, you need to do that analysis. You need to analyze your sponsors. You need to work with people you trust. But the reality is if you're just trying to gain back time, real estate's just a good place to invest.
Yeah.
It's not that you necessarily need to be knocking on doors, changing toilets, or even dealing with property managers, dealing with lawyers, dealing with insurance agents. And so that's the next phase of where we are now. It's helping people invest passively.
And as syndicators, we need the passive investors, right? Not everybody can be active, right? Because then it would be super saturated. But now, like, you need the people that, to your point, like you are like, hey, I love my job. I don't really intend on quitting. I make a lot of money and I just need to find another asset class to invest in outside of the stock market or your 401k, right? And so we provide them that outlet, right? And obviously there's a ton of syndicates out there. So I think to your point about vetting them is a very important piece of that puzzle. You mentioned you closed or closing a deal in Fort Worth. I think you said it was 140 some units. Is that right?
Well, it was 123 units. We closed in July, Fort Worth. Yeah.
Got it. So I'm invested in a deal in Fort Worth. I think we closed it a year or two ago. I like the market. I'm just curious about how you found it. Is that your biggest single deal that you have?
That's our biggest single deal. And again, we're GPs on that, right? So we got pulled in.
Oh, okay.
So the people that are scared of getting involved, right? Our goal was to be lead sponsors in 3 years. So I get into the first syndication. And again, we bring in our certain levels of expertise. My partner is a civil engineer by trade. So we come into this deal. We're adding structure. We're giving depth to what's going on. And then imposter syndrome, right? I've never done this before. I'm a loser. What am I doing here? Everyone is so smart. And then there's me. But you just do it, right? Just get in there, ask a question, make a comment. Fine. We do that well enough where when we got involved, the turns were budgeted at 14,000. They're spending 21,000. They're supposed to take 2 months or taking 4 months. And I'm in there and I'm like, I'm a fiduciary for my investors. And I'm like, full stop. Everyone stop. I want to see receipts. Like, I want to know what is going on. So we peel it back, rejigger everything, rescope. All right. Well, now we're at $14,000 and 15 days, right? So we're under budget, under time. So when they saw us do that, then automatically we start getting calls about the next deal. Hey, we really love the way you guys handle yourselves here. And we start vetting deals, right? Because we know these people now. We've worked a little bit with them. Some things we like, some things we don't. Who do we want to stay around? Who do we not? There was some great deal in Cleveland, but the hold was too long. And as we're doing this, we're talking to investors. We're just kind of getting that list back up to batch that works well for a syndication. And then we come across Fort Worth, great cash flow market, strong appreciation, great location, all the things that you know that work well about the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Yep.
And so we pulled the trigger on it. It was tough to get it over the line because while all those conversations are happening, interest rates just continue to skyrocket.
Yeah. And you said you bought it in July?
We closed in July. Yeah.
Got it. So yeah, you probably got that thing kind of LOI like 2 months prior to that, right? So
I think by the time we closed, we had 100 and change in built-in equity, right? So it wasn't a bad buy, you know, it wasn't a bad buy. That's cash flowing better than we thought, which is great. We're already getting the market rents without doing the full rentals. We're just make readies. And so it's going to be a good deal for us. And I'll be out there in a few weeks just to kind of check the pulse of what's going on. But the partners are there. Everyone's on it. So it's good. It's good.
Got it. Yeah, no, I like Fort Worth. I think it's a good market. I'm curious about the timing, right? Was the seller a kind of quote unquote distressed seller, or you know how they found it?
He was just tired. He was tired. He wasn't distressed.
Yeah.
He was just tired. He'd owned it since like 2005.
Oh, okay. So
there's a ton of things.
A lot of use out of that thing. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And so for us, there's a unit that we can build just right above the laundry room. There's like this random storage area that nobody's using. We're going to create a unit there. So, we'll gain our NOI will go up, refresh the laundry room, just things, right? Not crazy. It's not a huge capex that we need to do. We're just going to resurface the parking lot.
Yeah.
Get a little bit better for the tenants. But yeah, people love it, man. The average tenancy there is like 5 years, which is great. I mean, as soon as they come online, we're able to rent them out. So, what helps us just push rents a little bit more. In the wintertime, we won't do it as much. But I mean, there's always that little bit of room to edge. And then as we add rubs, we'll be in a good spot.
Yeah. And that's what the benefit of using a local on-site property manager, because they know the area, they know where the threshold is of how high you can push rents to still stay in that mid to upper 90s occupancy. And so that's always a sweet spot. I'm curious about the First Gen Foundations business itself. Like you mentioned a lot about education and helping. And so who is your kind of target audience for that type of business? And what kind of do you provide? I'm just kind of curious because this is the first time meeting you. So I'm curious to learn about that.
Yeah. So again, we're speaking to the first gen investor, and this is not the first generation American, right? This is the first gen investor. This is someone that's not investing a lot, right? Or someone that only has 401k. It's just, we sit there and we give them time. I guess our superpower is that we know that most people don't have someone to explain this to them.
Yeah.
And so whether we've gotten a lot of really nice messages or just conversations with investors of ours, they're like, dude, I'm not shopping anyone else. Nobody gives me the time you give me, right?
Yeah.
Because you're taught half hour meeting, do the pitch and get out, right? Because you got to do 50 of them. And that's fine. Like that's a great business model, works for tons of people. For us, because we both have W-2s that we do fine and we do well, we don't need to get into the next deal, right? So our goal is to truly give these people what they need, which is a little bit of coaching, a little bit of mentoring, into them making that first step. Now, if that is with us, great. If not, great. Our goal is to help build a foundation for your future. And so we've had a lot of people just come back and say, no, I'm with you. And so it does slow us down, right? So we grow slower, we grow less, but we'll grow better. We'll take people along with us. And so it goes back to that conversation. Like I said, on that Saturday morning with my wife, like, who are we helping?
Yeah.
And that's been the driver and my partner, who happens to be my brother. We have that same heartbeat. Our employees, they have that same heartbeat. We could do more tomorrow. I have a lot of people that are like, dude, just jump out, jump out, jump out. I'm like, I don't want to have to close 10 deals in a year to pay the bills.
Yeah.
I want to be able to help put people in good deals that I can manage, that my partner can manage, that we can do this thing right, because nobody wants to lose their money. We'll be okay.
Yeah, I think the smart growth, the building long-term relationships, because those 30-minute, 15-minute intro meetings just to get you kind of vetted and on the list, right, are transactional conversations. And that's fine for some people. But I think to your point, you're building a group of long-term investors that, because you've given them time, because you've given them your interest, your knowledge and everything, they're likely to stay with you even if you do come across or come into a bad deal, right? Whereas the transactional conversations, the first hint of not a great deal, they're probably going to move on to the next indicator, right? You're building that relationship with those people. And I think that could go a long way, especially.
Yeah. And the idea is, again, we're very active on Instagram, on LinkedIn. We have articles on our website. We'll start doing more like interactive stuff. We're hosting webinars and whatnot. I'm fully bilingual. And so we're starting to just do stuff now in Spanish, right? And so there is a huge, huge market for that, in the sense that there's not a lot of information. There's tons in English. There's a lot of people that are taking advantage in the Hispanic market, which bothered me. I was talking to a group the other day, which again, these things are humbling. Like, they were driving like 3 hours to come see me to have dinner. I'm like,
yeah,
no one, don't waste your time. But they start telling me a story. Like, no, there's a guy in our group. He spent $90,000 on coaching and he hasn't bought anything. And I'm like, what? And they're like, yeah, because in the Hispanic market, there's a lot of like, just feed you enough to come back.
Got
just
it.
For the patient. And it's like, no. And that broke my heart. And so I have to be careful how hard I pivot, because again, as a first generation American, I'm fully American, I'm fully Hispanic, I'm fully ingrained in this amazing country. And I want to be able to service both. I don't want to shut one out. And I might need to at some point focus that message, but we're getting that. We have people calling us from out of country, just trying to figure out like, hey, who can we trust out there? And then that's what the name of the game is. And it's like, who can they trust? And awesome. So the fact that we'll do a couple of deals a year, if that's who we are, that's who we are.
Yeah, no, I mean, there is that you can scale too far too fast and you can kind of run out of time, especially because you're both working W-2 jobs. It can become very time consuming to asset manage these deals and all that fun stuff. So no, I applaud the slow growth, the steady growth kind of approach for sure. I'm curious, as we kind of get to the closing period here of this episode, what is your kind of outlook though? Because you kind of came into the real estate investing world post a lot of the turmoil that people are seeing or dealing with now from the COVID time in 2021 and all that fun stuff. What's your outlook or what's your kind of focus for the rest of this year and the early part of 2024?
So one of the reasons that I have a partner is because I'm the growth guy. I'm like, let's go. And he's like, whoa, hold on a second, right? So we pull on those levers, right? But for us, I would not look away from a good deal, right? So I'll do like the top tier analysis of it. And then I give it to him to like shred it up, right? His job is to beat it up. And that's how we've gotten into two solid deals. There's many that we've passed on. I'm not opposed to, we have people out there looking for seller finance deals or assuming better rates. We've never been fans of floating rate. And I know that there's money to be made there. But as an investor, my biggest aversion is risk, right? And So what I want to know is, this is what my rate is, right? This is what my cost is going to be, at the risk of knowing that I'm going to lose some money, right? But I'm okay with that. Or not that I'm going to lose, but I'm not going to make. And so if the deal works this year, we'll go. You know, we have plenty of investors that are just like, what do you got? And so we have that. There's some funds that we might be launching this year. And because of 506B, 506C laws, I can't talk about much of it because a lot of our investors are 506B. We have plenty of 506C, but we do have a lot of 506B. So we're still looking to acquire. We're launching a fund probably in the next month or two. And then in 2024, our focus is operations. Like, we joined another operations mentorship. We want to be world-class operators. So it's continuing to understand, even in the better tone, KPIs, it's just more systems, understanding better leadership practices, because as you scale out, there are other people that are part of your team, which fall under first gen, right? So like our employees, we have to systematize that. But then we have the partners that we have, and it's creating systems for those groups and for specific deals and saying, hey, this KPI tracker needs to change here on this. We need to tweak that. And then, you know, something as simple as, hey, the 15th of the month, we're going to have the metrics so that the 20th of the month, the newsletter is done so that the 25th, it's even something as simple as mapping that out for a group. It really just helps ease the process. And you do it once, you do it again, and you just start to flow. And then you have to think less, right? When I started with the first syndication in Tampa, I was probably putting about 20 hours a week on it. Now it's just a few hours, 2-3 hours a week, because we were able to put systems in process and line people up. So if we can do that, then we can continue to do more.
No, I like it. It's been a great conversation. I want to pivot to the final three pack of questions that I ask every guest. Let's jump right in with the first one. What's one piece of advice that got you started or helped you along your real estate investing journey?
It's actually come up a lot lately. Mastery over perfection. There's a lot of people that just want to be perfect at everything and everything needs to be lined up. And the idea of incremental growth versus just those home runs has been huge for me. Even in a week like these last couple of weeks where there's just been very minimal baby steps, that day it sucked. But you look back 2 weeks ago, you're like, okay, there was some movement. So mastery over perfection.
Got it. No, I like it. You mentioned the one book that you kind of got you started, but what's your favorite real estate or business book that you're into right now?
Probably on syndication, it's going to be The Hands-Off Investor by Brian Burke. It's a dense book, like that's not for rookies, but it's just got great information. It goes from soup to nuts, right? Operations, debt, syndication structures. I like that one. And then I love Who Not How.
Yeah.
Which again, especially if you're going to try to keep your hands off of stuff, it's helping you to understand that you can outsource things and scale. And then a transformational book, I think recently has been The Go-Giver.
I don't know that one.
Yeah. You read it. It's a 2-hour read and you'll send me a note about it when you're done reading it. It's just great.
Got it. Yeah, I was actually, as you were talking about systems and process, if you hadn't heard of Who Not How, I was going to recommend it to you because I read it a few months ago and we just hired our first VA. And it is transformational when you kind of think about, you know, outsourcing and hiring people and all that stuff. It can exponentially grow your business and reduce your time and all that fun stuff. So definitely recommend that book. All right, final question. If you hit your financial freedom number, meaning you could live an amazing life just off of the passive income from your real estate investments, what would you do?
I'm a people guy, man. Like, I don't need to travel. I just want to be around people I love. So that's it. I just be around my wife, my siblings, my nieces and nephews. My wife has some health issues, which is why I'm not rushed into like, I need to make all this freaking money to do all these things because I don't need that. Like, quiet night at home. I live a very busy life because of the field I'm in. I mean, you know, it's super long nights, holidays, birthdays, like all that stuff at the early part of my career. Yeah. And so the idea that to not have to do that, that's something that I would take advantage of more, but I wouldn't necessarily do or buy anything. I have everything I need. Yeah. I have everything I want. I'm around the people I love. I'm good. I'm spoiled, man.
That's awesome. Very cool. Well, this has been an awesome conversation. Where can people find you? You've got your socials on the video, but obviously people listening to this on a podcast, obviously they can't see that. So how can people get at you if they want to learn more about First Gen Foundations and what you're up to?
Yeah, so we're on firstgenfoundations.com. That's our website. We have our investment thesis. We have a bunch of articles on there. You can check us out there. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, post 3, 4, maybe 5 times a week. Yeah. And then on Instagram, we're at First Gen Foundations.
Awesome. Brian, man, really appreciate the time. This has been a great conversation. Really appreciate it. And yeah, look forward to catching up in the future.
Thanks, Justin. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
I hope you got value out of this episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast, your one-stop shop for education on how you can continue to work hard in your career and have different options to invest even harder. If you took anything away from this episode, please like and comment. I read every comment as it helps me serve you better. Make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell. That way you won't miss out on more valuable content. If you're watching this video, it means that you want to grow your passive real estate portfolio. The easiest way to do that is to join our investor club by heading to greatventurecapital.com/invest. The link is in the show notes. See you on the next episode.